This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 249.
This podcast is brought to you by the Drury Hotels, our official hotel sponsor. The Drury has over 140 locations in 21 states. You can save 15% off of your room when you use the link on our website. Plus, you'll get our vintage podcast episodes for free. Once again, that's the Drury Hotels, D-R-U-R-Y. Use the link on our website. Drury Hotels, where the extras are not extra. Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about inspiring and empowering you to go the distance. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we recap the Pittsburgh Marathon in beautiful Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And in the quick tip segment, Angie answers the question, does everyone suffer horribly during the final miles of a marathon? And of course, you can learn about Academy membership and how to take your running to the next level when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. So Angie, lots to get into today in this episode. Looking forward to diving in. You and I just recently got to go on a little, We went on a 17-mile run together on the Appalachian Trail. That was a lot of fun.
It was. It had been raining, though, the previous week, and so the trail conditions were very sloppy and slippery. So I think we were both covered in mud from the knees down by the time we finished, but it was beautiful out.
It's better than being covered in ticks.
True. That's true. And you celebrated a birthday over the weekend, so happy birthday. And also, sort of as a birthday present, you got LASIK eye surgery.
Yeah, that's right. We mentioned this in our last episode, so if folks are wondering how it went, let me just say, I was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. I can see great without glasses now, and my vision is 20/20. It was kind of nerve-wracking. It was like probably the most freaky thing I've ever experienced. It didn't really hurt, but having your eyes burned with a laser, you can literally smell your eyes burning. It smells like hair, burning hair. It was pretty freaky, but good thing about it was a quick procedure, and now I'm healing up, so.
Awesome.
Well, before we get into talking all about the Pittsburgh Marathon, we want to give some shout-outs to folks running races and showing the world what's possible. So, Angie, what do you got for us?
Yeah, that's right. We'd like to congratulate Carrie in the Academy. She got a PR at the Flying Pig Marathon, which was earlier this month. And then just this last weekend, she got first in her age group and a half marathon PR. So she's tearing it up out there. And this note comes from Heidi in the Academy. She actually was at the Pittsburgh Marathon as well. She says, I had a great weekend doing the Steel Challenge at the Pittsburgh Marathon. We had awesome weather for the 5K on Saturday, and then a warm and humid Sunday for the marathon. It was marathon number 2 for me, and I got a 20-minute PR. I'm super proud because the hills were tough. Then we capped it off with a great time meeting fellow MTA members at the meetup. Thank you, Trevor, for organizing it. It was such a pleasure to meet you in person.
Yeah, we had a wonderful time. Got to meet Heidi and her husband, Brian. And we have a soundbite from the MTA meetup we will play later for you guys.
And this note comes from Joe. He says, I want to thank the MTA community and MTA coach Chris for helping me to train for my third marathon in Providence, Rhode Island. I couldn't have met my time goal without his help. And I set a PR of 3 hours and 15 minutes, which was our exact goal, shaving 25 minutes off my time from my last marathon in October of 2017. I have also never felt better after a race with no injuries or pain. My mom also ran yesterday, which is a big inspiration to me as well. Thank you for all the help. This is such a great community.
That is awesome. Wow, what a fast time. Actually, Joe and his mother, Marianne, are both in the group and both train with MTA coaches. So mother-son dynamic duo there.
That's right. I actually have a note here from Marianne. She says, I ran my second marathon in 7 months and I PR'd by 15 minutes. Again, my son Joe challenged me to run and we ran the Providence Road Marathon. I couldn't have done it without the excellent guidance of MTA coach Dominique. My first marathon I finished, but was wiped out afterward and suffered from severe leg cramps the last 6 miles. Coach Dom helped me to improve my pace, and more importantly, I felt great and joyous to the end. Thanks to Coach Dom and the MTA community for sharing all the highs and lows of marathon training so we could all learn from each other.
Nice. Love it. Sons, challenge your mothers. Mothers, challenge your sons.
And this note is from Hannah. She says, "Hi, Angie and Trevor. I'm very excited to say I ran my first marathon at the Fredericton Marathon in the small province of New Brunswick in Canada. I'm a 22-year-old university student and have been training hard and studying hard at the same time for the past 18 weeks. I finished with a time of 4 hours, 13 minutes, and 5 seconds. And thanks to all your helpful tips, I felt strong for most of the run, and I'm already planning my next marathon. In our little maritime provinces here in eastern Canada, we have a famous runner called the Joggler, who juggles the whole time he runs. He was there at the race today and finished a half marathon in 1 hour and 20 minutes while juggling the whole time."
Wow.
"Thanks for all the help and believing that I could run a marathon and change my life."
That is great. Thank you, Hannah, for that note. Congrats on running your first full marathon, and thanks for telling us about the Joggler. We've seen someone like that in a race before.
Yeah, as someone who personally has no hand-eye coordination, that totally blows my mind, because some days it feels like I can barely just run.
I think you should maybe get into air juggling. You can be the air juggler, kind of like the Will Ferrell bit on The Office where he air juggles for everybody because he forgot his balls.
Personally, I prefer to have my arms swinging loosely by my sides, but
I still like the mental image of you air juggling during a race.
That would be something to see. And this note comes from Allison. She says, "Hello, Angie and Trevor. Yesterday, I ran my first 50K. I wanted to thank you for all the hours of podcasts that I listened to while on my back-to-back training runs. What really got me through some tough spots in my race was remembering how you and Angie promote marathon training and racing as a lifestyle. I didn't need to push myself to injury or danger because ultramarathon and marathon running is now part of my life. When I knew I wasn't going to make my time goal because we got a massive heat wave the day of the race and temperatures were in the upper 80s, I just repeated to myself, 'Run your own race.' When I got turned around on the course at mile 20 and ended up doing an extra mile, I thought about the importance of smiling through the difficult parts and keeping my mind focused on the things I'm grateful for. So I plastered on a smile and put one foot in front of the other. I allowed myself to walk when I needed to, enjoyed the beauty of the forest, and cried tears of gratitude for my family who supported me, the community of runners online and in my town, and for the hard work I did to make it 31.3. I do have what it takes to run an ultra marathon and change my life."
Well, congrats, Allison. That is a long way to run. Congrats on throwing the hammer down at your 50K and having the mental toughness to get through that. And finally, we'd just like to say congrats to one of our amazing coaches, Chris Gallaty, who ran what is probably the most epic marathon out there, one of the most, and it's one that's on Angie and I's bucket list, and that is the Great Wall Marathon in China. He finished in 4 hours and 43 minutes, 23rd overall. He says, "The course was brutal with lots of hills, stairs, elevation changes, and many places where walking was the only option. But a finish is a finish, and so no complaints. It was an amazing experience, but without question, one of the toughest marathons ever done."
Wow.
So yeah, there you have it, man. Great Wall Marathon. We got to do that someday, Angie.
Better start practicing our stair running right now. Or just stair walking.
Well, congrats to all of you out there running races and getting things done. We hope you enjoy this race recap. We're going to take you to Pittsburgh now. We got a lot planned here, so you guys are going to love it. Let's go ahead and get into our feature segment of this episode right now. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. All right, well, now it's time for one of our world-famous race recaps. We've done a lot of these over the years because we've been to a lot of races. We're going to tell you all about the Pittsburgh Marathon, or I should say I'm going to tell you about it because, Angie, you weren't there.
No, I wasn't.
So, Angie, thanks for staying here with the kids and keeping things running while I was running.
No problem.
So I've got a friend named Jeff Palladina, and he's been hyping up the Pittsburgh Marathon to me for a couple of years. Angie, you and I actually first met Jeff and his wife, Julia, after you ran the Boston Marathon. We were coming back through Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and we stayed with Jeff and Julia because we were kind of scoping out this area because we were thinking about moving here. It took us about 2 years to sell our house in Missouri and finally move to central Pennsylvania. And Jeff and I stayed in contact, and he kept telling me about the Pittsburgh Marathon. Got to run the Pittsburgh Marathon, man. You got to do it. So after we moved here, I signed up. So I've been running 2 marathons a year, mainly destination races, for the last couple years. And for those that haven't heard my story, I started out as a complete desk potato when we first launched the MTA podcast back in 2010. And with your help, Angie, I trained for my first marathon, which was in St. Louis. And after I ran that, I thought I would never do it again.
That was in 2011, correct?
Yeah. How many times do people think that, though, after they run their first marathon?
I'm sure it's pretty common. I mean, I've felt that after marathons. Well, during marathons, more like.
Yeah.
Usually after I cross the finish line, I'm like, that was awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty euphoric to finish. But during that last part, it can be the pits of despair.
Which we'll talk about a little bit later.
That's right. So the 2018 Pittsburgh Marathon was held on May 6th. And this is a race that was first held in 1985 and then continued till 2003. And it was sponsored in part by the city. But when the recession hit, the city ran into financial difficulty and the title sponsor pulled out. So the race was discontinued. And there was a number of years where Pittsburgh had no marathon.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So the race was revived in 2009 and it is now run by a nonprofit called P3R. Which is a Pittsburgh Three Rivers Marathon Incorporated. And for those of you that have never been to the great city of Pittsburgh, it's nicknamed the Steel City because it was at one time the leading manufacturer of steel in the U.S. And it has 446 bridges.
Wow, that's a lot. What's the river that goes through there?
There's three rivers.
Oh, three rivers. Oh, that's why it's the marathon, I guess. Or the race company, Three Rivers.
Yeah. You're a smart cookie, Angie.
Putting the pieces together here.
In the early 1900s, it was the eighth largest city in the U.S., and it produced one-third to one-half of the nation's steel. And as times have changed, the cool thing about the city, it has been able to shift its economy. It's been able to shift into medicine, education, finance, and tech. So today, it's a very vibrant city, and the race was relaunched. And I thought, instead of like trying to round up all the facts about the race and the actual size of it, I would just do one better. I got a real treat for you guys. I'm going to bring on the race director of the Pittsburgh Marathon. Her name is Patrice Matamoros, and she's a very talented visionary and executive, and she helped relaunch the race and make it into what it is today. And I always love talking to race directors because we get to kind of see a behind-the-scenes view of what it takes to pull off something this size. So here's a short interview with the race director herself. We're going to find out what it takes to close down a city and let thousands of people run through it. All right, I'm on the podcast now with Patrice Matamoros. She is the race director at the wonderful Pittsburgh Marathon, which I just ran recently. Patrice, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk about the race.
So let's talk about the history of the Pittsburgh Marathon. I know there was a span of years where the race was discontinued. Is that right?
Yes, there's basically a five-year hiatus. Between 2003 and 2009, we brought it back.
Okay. And what was the reason for kind of like the hiatus, and then what was the story behind reviving it?
Well, I think that there were a couple of different things and factors that really were part of the decision not to have the Pittsburgh Marathon. Mm-hmm. UPMC was a title sponsor who chose to sponsor the Senior Olympics, and then the city had filed bankruptcy. And between those two big financial consequences, it was determined that it would be too difficult to raise the money needed to put on a marathon. So wow. It kind of lay dormant for a number of years until some previous board members had gone to other cities with the marathon and said, you know what, it's not right that Pittsburgh doesn't have a marathon. Mm-hmm. Let's try to bring one back and let's see what we can do to bring a marathon back to Pittsburgh.
And hasn't there been like a revival just in general in Pittsburgh, you know, bringing in a lot of tech companies? And I mean, it seemed like it's a thriving city now.
It really is. It's really kind of hit a renaissance in which technology is a huge, huge factor here. Google has a headquarters here. Hmm. Apple has an office here. And then we have CMU, which is really a hotbed for tech students all over the world to come, you know, in terms of education. And we do have, you know, University of Pittsburgh, we have Carnegie Mellon University. So it's a lot of education-based, which leads to technology-based companies and corporate headquarters, because a lot of people find it attractive when they look at the city and say, cost of living is really reasonable. And so they look at the workforce here too, and it's a very attractive place. So it's really seen a boom in the last couple of years.
One company that I really like is the language learning company Duolingo.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And they're also headquartered here.
Yeah. I was listening to an interview with their founder, and he was being asked, why are you in Pittsburgh and not Silicon Valley? And he said, well, mm-hmm. Pittsburgh is becoming like a Silicon Valley in the East.
It really is.
That's awesome. Did the revival of the marathon, this sounds like it kind of paralleled in the revival of the city.
It really did. It did. And then, you know, I think that it was a missing piece for our city. When you look at other major cities that have marathons, there was a running community that was already established here, and it kind of just opened up the floodgates for people to register and get on board with the rebirth of the Dick's Sporting Goods Pittsburgh Marathon. So it's been great in terms of people registering. We've seen a ton of people who have heard from a ton of people who have said they didn't ever run before it came back. They were inspired by it, and they put it on their bucket list.
That's great. So how many years have you been involved?
10 years since it came back. So it's been a while.
Wow. So you helped orchestrate the revival then of the Pittsburgh Marathon. That's awesome.
Yeah. It started on my credit card because there were no funds.
Oh, man.
There were some verbal agreements in place, but a lot of things needed to be ironed out before those verbal agreements were in writing and we actually got checks in the door. So it was really a big sales game in terms of bringing money in so I could get paid and so I could pay other people to help.
So in pulling all of this together to relaunch the marathon, like what were some of the big pieces in doing that? Maybe some of the more challenging things. I have never done something like this, so I'm interested.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And the first year was the best year because we didn't know what we didn't know. We didn't know all the risks associated with planning a major event like this in the city. But most of the work went into really trying to connect the community to the event and let the community know it was back and also letting runners know it was back. And so the community effort was a huge effort. Sponsorship was a daily effort with lots of calls. And my goal was to collect as many no's as I could because I knew eventually I could probably turn them into a yes. So it was a all-out effort in a lot of cases. I mean, I would say it was really similar to doing a startup.
Yeah.
We had to raise $1 million of seed money to put the show on. So it was a lot of hard work, and it was work around the clock. And then it's also collecting the people who can help execute at the level that you want to execute it. And from day one, we never said we want to have just an average marathon or we just want to get it back. We always said we want to create another world-class marathon if we can.
So let's talk about some numbers, if you don't mind. Like how many people
Sure.
participated this year in the various events?
Well, we have so many events now. So we're a weekend of events. There were over 40,000 in our weekend of events. So starting with the expo, numbers of people who had gone through our expo were 75,000.
Wow.
Had gone through our expo this year, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
The other thing is, we started a 5K on Saturday, and this year we had 4,400 runners registered for the 5K. We had a kids marathon, and that is a huge event now. It was 6,400 kids registered, and we had to cut off registration, plus their parents, so that would be about 10,000 in that race alone.
Wow.
And then if you go over, we have a park called Point State Park, and we do a toddler trot, and over 500 toddlers participated.
Wow.
That's our future. So we're super excited, and people really love that. And we run heats for probably about an hour and a half of toddlers.
That's cool.
It's 26.2. Yeah. And then we have actually included the family pets now, too. So we're really focused on being inclusive so that anybody and everybody can participate in some form or fashion throughout the weekend. So that day is a huge day for us. We see probably about 11 to 15,000 people on Saturday. And then Sunday is our full marathon, which we had about 4,400 register for the full marathon. And we would have been over 45, but people switched down to the half.
Mm-hmm.
And in the half, we had about 14,000 registered. And then in the relay, we had 1,081 teams, which there is a five-person relay, so that's about 5,000 people if you count each leg, because it's an individual runner that you're accounting for.
So here's another question. It's kind of a weird question, but just to give people an idea of like the sheer size of this thing, how many paper cups did you guys have to buy to put the water out at the aid stations?
I think we had over 300,000 paper cups. So, and then we have another 80,000 in a truck just in case.
That is interesting. So anything else like that, that can give us an idea of like quantity?
Yeah, I mean, when you're, it's like 22,000 gallons of water.
Mm.
And there are, on race day, there's 20,000 bananas. And that's always fun to look at. And, you know, in terms of fencing, 9,000 linear feet of fencing is needed for that day. The capabilities that we have at the finish line and the medical tent also is really impressive, because UPMC really handles that medical tent uniquely, in the fact that it's kind of like an exercise. If there were an incident in Pittsburgh and we had to create a field tent,
mm-hmm.
our tent at the marathon is what that field tent would be modeled after. So we have a field tent in the city that's about 10,000 square feet, along with lighting, and there's abundance of generators, air conditioning or heat, doors, and there are triage areas, and there are different beds for different things like musculoskeletal or heat or, ICU for rehydration. And then we also have 26 ambulances that we bring in from all over, and we stage them in various parts of our course. So, it's always looking at what do we need to do and how much of everything do we need. We have over 500 medical people on our team.
Wow.
And 18 first aid stations, and about 1-3% of our participants will end up needing some medical care, whether it be a Band-Aid or something minor, all the way up to, being hospitalized.
So how did it go? I mean, I had a good time, but you were running a different race than I was. I mean, you had a lot more responsibilities. So anything tricky present itself that you guys had to just deal with?
Some things that you're always dealing with on the fly, because there is something you went, we didn't anticipate that, or, mm-hmm. but nothing major. I'd say nothing that was a material issue where people are going to be impacted by that mistake. Everything that we had thrown at us, we managed it internally and it was fine. But again, I mean, we meet all the time with people and try to go over plans constantly, and all of the work that goes into making that organized. I always say, you guys put in miles and we put in hours and hours of time. And on race weekend, we will run a marathon. Between the start line, finish line, and all the other things you're doing, you log a marathon typically on race weekend.
Wow. So you're going to take a nice vacation after this?
Oh, I would love to. That's the hardest part. After you plan and you work and you exit, there's an enormous amount of stress of there's 40,000 people you're going to let down if things don't go well or right, or weather impacts you. And mm-hmm. and then other things like, what if you have a fire on the course? And so you have a great deal of stress prior to the race. And then it takes probably about a month and a half to kind of come down from that.
Hmm.
And, we're still working hard. We're still wrapping things. We're doing downloads. And that's hard because you just like spent your whole year. Imagine if your whole year was spent doing something and you have one day, which all those people look at your job. And if you're having a bad day, and that means your whole next year really is bad, because people only see that one day of work or that weekend of work that we've put into a year. So it's hard to kind of come down from that. And it was good. It was a great year. So it's a huge relief for me, and I'm thankful and I'm so happy, but I'm still working pretty hard wrapping things up. And we also are going to help with the Cleveland Marathon. We have a great partnership with them, and we're going up. We'll help them with whatever they need this weekend.
That's awesome. So I appreciate you speaking with me. One final question. When can people sign up for the 2019 Pittsburgh Marathon?
Well, they can get in right now. We have a mega ticket. It won't last long. We'll be ending that soon. but we'll be opening registration this summer. We are looking at dates and looking at what our plans are going to be. So when we open and launch, we're set to go.
Great. Well, I highly recommend everyone to make their way to the Pittsburgh Marathon. It's an amazing city and it's a great race. Thank you, Patrice, for speaking with me today. And I just want to say thanks to all the volunteers there at the Pittsburgh Marathon. Tell them there's one podcaster here that they've made a big impression on.
Oh, perfect. Well, thank you. And thanks for running our event. And, you know, thanks for letting us have an opportunity to talk about our event with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Big thank you to Patrice for letting me interview her. Our heartfelt appreciation for all the race directors and volunteers and teams that put on these races, you know, all over the world, because it is not a simple thing to do.
Yeah, a huge job and, you know, takes a big coordination effort and team to be able to let us do what we do. So you headed down to Pittsburgh on Saturday before the marathon. And how was the race expo and your pre-race activities?
Well, like Patrice mentioned, the race expo is huge. I think she said they had 75,000 people that went through it. It's refreshing to go to a race that is growing, because there are some races here in the U.S. that are kind of struggling. Like marathon participation is a little bit down from what it has been in previous years. But you definitely don't get that feeling when you're at the Pittsburgh Marathon Race Expo and race day. Race Expo was actually held at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center. It was right on the river. And the cool thing is, it was really close to the Drury Hotel where I stayed.
Perfect.
I mean, it was like a 5-minute walk. Many of you know that the Drury Hotel Company has been a longtime sponsor of our podcast, like our first sponsor that we ever had. And we've stayed at dozens and dozens of their locations throughout the United States, you know, in the Midwest and Southwest. And now they have one location in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh. They got a beautiful downtown building that was an old bank building that they remodeled. Just very well done. It's like perfect location for this race, because from my hotel room, I could look out and see Corral A of the marathon the next day. And since we're talking about the Drury Hotel, folks, let me mention you can get 15% off your room with our special handy dandy link. Look on our website in the sidebar, you can find the link. And you also get a free gift from us, our first 50 podcast episodes that are the episodes that made us famous, right, Angie?
I don't know about that, but they're not ones available on iTunes anymore, so.
Yeah, so book a room at the Drury, save 15%, and get our vintage podcast episodes. That's a special deal we've worked out with them. So I wandered around the Race Expo for a bit and checked out the vendors. There was a beer company, Sierra Nevada Beer, was giving out samples.
And I'm sure you were like hot on that.
They actually carded me.
Wow.
Yeah. So he asked me for my ID. And I'm like, really? He's like, anyone who's under 30, I have to ask for their ID.
Oh, he was buttering you up.
So especially because I just turned 38 yesterday.
Yes.
It's nice to be ID'd.
You've been carded twice recently, so good job.
I love it. It's my new eyes, maybe. I don't know. At the expo, they gave us a technical t-shirt, which is like a yellow long sleeve shirt. Yellow, or maybe I should call it gold. It's the color of the Pittsburgh Steelers, the football team. You see it everywhere in the city. Everything's like, all the bridges are painted gold. But it wasn't until after I got home that I noticed that the t-shirt said half marathon.
That is so weird, because that happened to me at my last race.
Okay, folks, so do yourselves a favor. Make sure you get the right t-shirt before you leave the expo.
Check your shirt.
So I mentioned that the shirt is this gold color, because the city colors of Pittsburgh are black and gold. The bridges are all painted that color. And I have never seen a city that is so crazy for its teams. Pittsburgh, everywhere you go, it's gold and black. And they're like memorabilia and team stores just all over the city. And I think it might be fair to say the city bleeds black and gold. So I headed back to the hotel, got some rest before I went to dinner with the Harrisburg area runners, organized by my friend Jeff Palladina, who I mentioned, and tried to get in bed early because race day was approaching fast.
That's right, and you are not a morning person.
I am not. So the marathon started at 7 a.m. I woke up at 6, and I looked out my hotel window, and I could see runners already like going to the corrals. I could literally see Corral A from my window. And I thought to myself, okay, the race starts at 7. It is right there. I'm going to leave my room at 6:55.
Of course you would think that.
But I actually ended up heading out at 6:45. But the thing about it is, since I was going to run such a slow race, I was way back in Corral D. So I had to walk like a mile.
You couldn't just wait until the race started and then, like,
no,
get it in was, with the Corral D?
It was enforced really well. Like, there were chain link fences blocking off all the corrals and people monitoring very closely who went in there.
So you could only get in the corral that corresponded to your bib.
Exactly, yeah. And I had to walk way to the end, which was fine. I still made it in there on time, maybe with a minute to spare, which is how I like to roll. I was so far in the back, though. I mean, it was just runners as far as the eye can see. And the weather looked like it might start raining. So I had my long sleeve shirt on. And I don't know if you remember this, Angie, but I had a cold, like a runny nose kind of situation.
Yeah.
In the days leading up. So I wasn't feeling like optimal. So I actually ended up keeping this long sleeve shirt, even though I took it off after the first mile. Because, okay, brace yourselves, guys. This shirt became like my handkerchief throughout the whole race.
Say no more.
No, I was really glad for it because it was...
No, really. Say no more.
So the marathon started with gusto, and I'll play a little sound bite here for you so you can hear what I was hearing. And then I'll tell you all about the course and its glorious hills. Well, we started in downtown Pittsburgh near the convention center, and we ran through what's called the Strip District, where there's many restaurants and grocery stores. There's a famous restaurant down there, Angie, called Bramante Brothers, where you can get a Bramante Bros sandwich, which has grilled meat, an Italian dressing-based coleslaw, sliced tomatoes, and French fries piled between two pieces of Italian bread. Does that sound good?
I'm sorry, it doesn't. But of course, I'm just coming off having the stomach flu, so
yes,
a lot of things still don't sound good.
Oh, that's right. Why are you standing so close to me? If you are hungry, go and Google it because it actually looks really good when you're hungry. Maybe not so much if you're not hungry. But it's famous. It's a famous sandwich for sure.
Sounds like a good post-race meal.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So we continued on, and between the second and third mile, we ran across our first bridge. Pittsburgh has a ton of bridges. It's situated between three rivers, the Allegheny, the Ohio, and the Monongahela rivers. So you're all the time going across bridges, which is fun. And most of them are painted, guess what color?
Gold.
That's right. So around the third mile, we ran into the North Side District, which has the Andy Warhol Museum, because Andy Warhol was born in Pittsburgh.
Very cool.
Might explain why, you know, a lot of his paintings were industrial objects, like the Campbell's soup can, you know. The rain was holding off, and I was still feeling good. Of course, the race is young. My legs are still feeling fresh. So I was trying not to go too fast, because it's tempting to run too fast in the first half of a marathon.
Yes, it is.
And in the days leading up to this race, I don't know if you remember me talking about, I felt like this little flicker of pain under my kneecap. It felt like maybe I had runner's knee coming on. So I was kind of being careful going up and down stairs and in the tapering period. Do you remember me saying that?
No, I just remember you complaining about your cold.
Okay. So when I mentioned I felt like I maybe had the beginnings of runner's knee and this little tinge of pain, you said to beware of phantom pain before a race.
Oh, okay. Now I remember.
So yeah, it turns out I didn't have any issues during the marathon. I never had knee pain, still don't. So I think it was phantom pain.
Aha.
How does that work?
Well, I think in the tapering period, sometimes our mind tries to fixate on certain things.
Yeah.
And we tend to overanalyze our body, you know, because we want everything to go so perfectly during the race. We've trained hard and we want to feel good. And so any twinge or little thing that we might otherwise not even think about, our mind tends to focus on. And so especially past injury sites or areas we've had issues before, our mind can really get busy on that and kind of...
Invent pain.
Invent pain or, you know, make a mountain out of a molehill.
Yeah. Between mile 7 and mile 11, we ran by the Heinz Field. Angie, did you know that Heinz ketchup is from Pittsburgh?
No, that's really cool.
So the Heinz Field is where the Steelers play. And then we ran across another large, beautiful bridge to the west end. And I remember running along the river for about 3 or 4 miles. And to the right, going up a hill, there was something called the Duquesne Incline. It's a rail system with two trolley cars that carries passengers up Mount Washington at a 30-degree angle. And I think it's about 800 feet or so to the top. And it was actually built in 1887 and back in the day before there were roads going up there, because there was people that lived up there and they would come down to the river to work. There were several inclines, I guess, around the city that would carry folks because Pittsburgh, as I've said, is full of hills. So continuing along the river, one can see the city skyline, bridges, riverboats moored along the shore. We ran to the Southside District, which looked like a really fun part of town. There were plenty of water and Gatorade stops. Lots of folks out cheering, especially, you know, as we ran through residential parts of town. I found myself needing to stop and pee, like, really early on. So I started looking for a porta pot. And there was always a couple, like, here and there. So, you know, you go for a mile or a mile and a half, there'd be one. Go for another mile, there'd be another one. And there was always a line. So I would run by one and there'd be, you know, six people waiting. And I'm like, okay, I'll make it to the next one. And then all I thought about the whole mile was, I gotta pee.
That's miserable. And it seems like you tend to have like an issue during races where your body like dumps large amounts of fluid because you frequently have to stop multiple times to pee during a race, which...
I had to stop three times.
Wow.
Exercise-induced urination. Is that a thing?
Could be.
I hope someone out there feels my pain. And it's not like I had a lot of coffee before the race. I think I had like half of a styrofoam cup of coffee.
Yeah, and you're not one to overhydrate at aid stations either. So it is really weird. Like your body just like triggers a dump of excess body fluids.
I don't know what it is, but it did kind of kill my time. But you got to just take life as it comes, you know?
I think that's a good lesson. You know, if you have to go, just stop, even if you have to wait in line for a minute or two, because most likely you'll have to wait at the next one anyway, and you'll just be miserable and not able to enjoy the race.
Exactly.
If you keep going and keep thinking that you're going to find the ideal spot. So did the marathon course at any time go by the half marathon finish line, or did you kind of have a completely different route that you were taking?
We didn't have to run by the finish line.
That's nice.
The course split, and between mile 11 and 12, we ran across the Birmingham Bridge, and then I started seeing signs that read, "You are now on the full marathon course."
Ooh, it's getting real.
So I knew that fun times were ahead, and I developed this mantra that just kind of came to me, and this is how I felt, because it was kind of getting warm, and, you know, I was getting tired. Thankfully, the rain was holding off, and the clouds were blocking the sun, but it was a humid day for sure. And the mantra that came to me was, chew through the miles.
Chew through the miles. Wow. that's a new one.
I just thought of myself just kind of like an industrial cog, like chewing through a conveyor belt of miles, like a trash compactor. You know, it's nothing elegant, nothing fluid, just chewing them up 1 kilometer at a time, 1 mile at a time, just getting it done. That's what came to me.
Chew them up and spit them out.
But pretty soon the marathon chewed me up and spit me out. Okay, probably about mile 11. And the half marathoners have split off. Time to just keep chewing through the miles. So after crossing the bridge, we were in a section of Pittsburgh called Oakland. And we ran by some really nice homes, just mansions. It felt like we were in an old money part of town. And then we ran by the famous Carnegie Museum of Natural History and the Museum of Art. But I remember seeing a huge dinosaur statue out front of the Natural History Museum, and it had a Steelers scarf tied around its neck.
Very appropriate.
Between mile 14 and 15, we turn onto Walnut Street in the Shadyside neighborhood, which appears to be an old part of town that's been turned into a hipster paradise. Angie, you would fit in well there, you hipster.
You mocking me?
We ran by an Apple store, Lululemon, Patagonia. They're all these hipsters drinking their soy lattes, cheering on the runners. And some of them were looking like they had just discovered that a marathon was running by.
Which is probably true. And they were probably thinking, great, now how am I going to get home with all these road closures?
That's what I would have been thinking too. Okay. Pittsburgh Marathon, I'm about mile 15.
Got it, guys.
Walking up a little hill. Lots of good signs, lots of great spectators. I got to chuckle, this one guy standing there like he just woke up and discovered there was a marathon. And he says, just a few more miles, only 15. Gotta love it. Going through a residential neighborhood here, past water station. My legs are definitely feeling like I've gone 15 miles on hills, like you would expect. But having a good time. Gotta keep chewing through these miles. Check with you later. Between mile 15 and 20, we ran through the neighborhoods of Point Breeze, Homewood, and East Liberty, which are definitely more economically depressed than Oakland and Shadyside, from my observation. And, you know, it's interesting to see the contrast, and that's what I love about this course, is because you run through all of these districts, neighborhoods, you get to see just the whole range of what Pittsburgh has to offer, and you get to see a city in a way that you wouldn't be able to experience it just driving through in a car. You know, all these little neat details that you notice when you run, sights, sounds, smells, everything. Actually, going through somewhere around mile 16, I got a good whiff of marijuana from somewhere.
Oh my. Did you follow your nose?
Then I got a massive runner's high. Actually did get a runner's high, though, during this race. I'll talk about that in a minute. We ran through these neighborhoods, and the people were out there, and they're just enthusiastically cheering the runners. There were bands. There were funny marathon signs. And when we got in the East Liberty neighborhood, we ran by the East Liberty Presbyterian Church, which is this massive Gothic-style structure, 300 feet high. It's like a skyscraper of a building in the Gothic style. I remember seeing that. It's a landmark. Between miles 16 and 17, I was like really deep into my running music playlist, and I got totally lost in the music, just really focused on thoughts outside of myself. Like, my legs were tired, as one can imagine after running 16 miles, but my mind began to disassociate from the pain and direct my thoughts out and away from my body. And I got this runner's high. Don't think it was due to the marijuana whiff. The endorphins kicking in. Have you ever had that happen, Angie?
Oh, yeah. That's the best feeling. I'm sure some people are wondering what kind of music is on this magical playlist of yours.
Well, it's a mix. I'm kind of eclectic, but there's, you know, a lot of heavy metal, hard rock. There's some folk. There's some Alexi Murdoch. Mainly music that Angie won't let me play in the house. You never know when a running high is going to kick in and when you're just going to feel good for a couple miles. It's the strangest thing. My mind became just really free. And like I said, I wasn't thinking about aches and pains. I didn't have to pee. You know, I wasn't obsessing about, you know, my feet being tired. I was just in flow. I wish I could have sustained it, you know, for the whole race. I mean, the pros, I'm sure, know how to do it. But I felt so good that I decided just to open it up. And we hit this nice long downhill section. And I started, you know, running past people. And even though I knew the pace wasn't sustainable, I wanted to have fun while it lasted.
Right.
And I was so into the music, and it felt so good that I actually closed my eyes, and I was running with my eyes closed for as long as I could.
Don't try this at home, folks.
I was just imagining my body feeling the weight of gravity pulling me forward, pushing my tired legs to the beat of the music, and it was like I was running on air. And even with my eyes closed, you know, I could visualize the course, and I tried to keep them closed as long as I could until the fear of running into somebody forced me to open them.
I'm guessing the course wasn't overly crowded at this point.
It wasn't. Okay, I'm between miles 17 and 18. I'll tell you what, I was feeling really good between 16 and 17. Kind of had a runner's high. My mind just became divorced from my body. My legs were just gliding, and I wasn't thinking about it. I felt like I had tunnel vision. I was just ignoring all the runners around me. I was even running with my eyes closed for a while, just listening to the beat of my music. And nice downhill stretch, just opened it up, just passing people. Felt good. Of course, you can't keep that up forever. You gotta pace yourself. So, taking a little walk break now. I just went through aid station. And that's the deal. Check in with you later. So I was in flow for those couple miles. It felt great, but then I, of course, started to slow down. And I actually don't remember much between mile 20 and 23 other than how much I was slowing down. And we were still running over hill after hill after hill.
You like kind of block those out.
It was feeling really humid. And the last 6 miles of a marathon, as you guys know, can be grueling. And for me, I always start to fade. I have run a sub 4 hour marathon twice where my pace was pretty good, you know, between the first and second half of a marathon. It was more of an even pace. But lately, it just feels like the second half of a marathon really trashes me. And we're going to talk about this in the quick tip because we had a question about this. Angie, you're better at running just solid throughout the race. I feel like you can push yourself better through the second half of a marathon than I can.
It just depends on my training and also my goal for the race.
Yeah.
I would say a lot of my marathons lately have been positive splits where I've slowed down a lot in the second half, which has been fine. It's not anything I'm upset about. I would say even for advanced marathoners, keeping even pace and or getting a negative split during a marathon is still a real challenge. So I don't think it's something that you like arrive at the mountaintop and then you never run another positive split marathon again. It just, there's so many factors that goes into it.
Okay, mile 20 just went by, and starting to feel like the marathon is chewing through me instead of me chewing through it. It hurts so good, as they say. At this point, you just gotta hold on for six more miles, keep your feet moving, try to block negative thoughts, and you know, think about all the times that you've run 6 miles. It's nothing, you know? This is where the test is, though. You're running 6 miles on tired legs. This is where the real race starts, right here. So with those words, I will leave you, and I will hang on and chew through 6 more miles, baby. Woo! Here we go.
As I started to slow down and take more and more walk breaks, negative thoughts started creeping into my brain like this. You know, I'm just not built to be a marathon distance runner.
I've heard you say that more than once.
Or, look at me, I have no natural talent for this. Angie can be the marathoner in the family. I'll just be the half marathon guy. And I knew I would finish. There was never any doubt that I would cross the finish line. I was just beating myself up over how long it was taking. I was remembering back to like when I was a faster runner, doing 4-hour marathons, 4:15, 4:20. And now, you know, I'm like turning in 5-hour marathons lately. Then I had to remind myself of my goal. Like my goal for this race and for the last couple of races I've done is just to have a good time. And I'm not trying to set a PR. If I was, I wouldn't be doing it at Pittsburgh.
And you wouldn't be taking pictures along the way and stopping for beer and, you know, basically like being a tourist on foot, you know, because you do miss a lot of the details when you run a faster and more focused race. So
I had to shake this off and just remember my goal was to enjoy the journey and have fun. So we ran through the neighborhoods, Highland Park, Friendship, and Bloomfield, and the crowds were great. And I saw a sign that said, "At least you're not at work." And another sign said, "Smile if you're not wearing underwear." Of course, on the last podcast, Angie, we let go the secret that most runners don't wear underwear.
That's all right.
And there were friendly Pittsburghers. I'm not even sure that's what they call themselves. Pittsburghians, Pittsburghers. They were out there giving out beer, like little cups of beer.
Right up your alley.
Yeah, I think I stopped 3 times total.
Just ran by these dudes that were just shredding on that guitar, man. And then I just took beer at 2 different unofficial beer stops. Because I don't care about nothing. Nice little downhill here. Bring it on in. Gonna keep chewing through them miles. My hip hurts, my feet hurt, but my heart is in it. These are gnarly hills here, man, in the great city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Peace out.
At mile 24, we were in the home stretch. We were back in the Strip District where we had started out, and it was actually starting to rain a little, but the crowds were not assuaged. Before I reached mile 26, I saw the back entrance to the Drury Hotel where I stayed. It was weird because I could have just jumped off the course and in a matter of minutes been on an elevator to my room.
If you had the urge to quit, that would have been the time, huh?
The finish line was in downtown along the Boulevard of the Alleys. There were bleachers lining the streets for people to watch the runners. People were ringing bells, giving high fives, screaming support to the runners. And then, Angie, I saw the most beautiful sight in the marathon, and that is the finish line.
That's right.
Picked up my pace, and because, you know, you want to look good when you finish, so you want to sprint. I sprinted across the finish line, and for some strange reason, I kept running after I crossed the last timing mat. Like, it didn't occur to me that I was done.
You still had a lot in the bank, right. Apparently, huh?
So I crossed to the last tummy mat, and then I ran all the way to the lady giving out the medals. I'm like, oh, wait, why am I still running?
Your auto run setting was still engaged.
It was like a robot at that point. They handed me a sizable medal made of steel. Got it right here. You guys should see this. It says Dick's Sporting Goods Pittsburgh Marathon Runner of Steel. And this thing, feel that, Angie, it's like the most solid metal.
Yeah, it's very heavy. It could be used as a defensive object in a time of need.
This could be a murder weapon right here, seriously.
It's pretty heavy duty.
Okay, cross that finish line. I was so excited I kept running past the mat. Okay, you can hear the metals. They're handing out, clinging together. Pretty cool. Thank you. Ooh, that's a nice one. Wow, this is a big medal made of steel, really heavy. Love it. All right, time to find some food. Peace out.
That is marathon number 15 for me. Feels good to cross the finish line. I still felt plenty of strength in my legs. I didn't need to sit down or anything. I made my way to the finish area where they had a festival taking place. Then I started looking for a place to sit down. So my buddy Jeff told me about the post-race tent that's set up for the run clubs. So I found this run club rally tent, found Jeff and his wife Julia. It was dry and out of the rain. They had places to sit and they had hot pizza.
Nice.
Talking about a great way to refuel.
It's better than cold pizza.
So while I was there, I got a little soundbite here with Jeff and his love for this race. So here's that soundbite. Okay, I'm here in the hospitality tent with my friend Jeff Palladina, who is originally from the Pittsburgh area, I think, right, Jeff?
Yep, I'm from Aliquippa, steel mill town.
Okay, so explain how this whole thing works, the running clubs.
So the Pittsburgh Marathon has a unique program called the Running Club Rally. Any running club could register. Even the academy could register as a running club. And if you get 20 members, well, first of all, all the members get a group discount on your registration after the early bird pricing's over.
Yeah.
And then if you get 20 members, you get access to this hospitality tent.
They had Chipotle in here. They've got pizza, ice cream. It's pretty lit, man. This pizza is great.
Yeah, it's an amazing benefit. Private gear check. So we had our own gear check truck, and they delivered our gear check right to the bag, or our bags right to the tent. And
nice.
It's a free benefit.
Yeah.
So we brought out about 140 people from Harrisburg here, and we've been having a three-day party. And this is the.
It's the largest group for the Running Club Rally.
That's correct, for 2 years in a row.
All organized by Jeff, who is the biggest fan of the Pittsburgh Marathon and the biggest fan of Pittsburgh one can ever meet.
I always say that I'm very proud to be from Pittsburgh, and I can't wait to show it off to my friends in Harrisburg. And I'm also proud of my friends in Harrisburg, and I can't wait to show them off to the city of Pittsburgh for how hard they've worked to come for this day. Seeing them all PR, seeing the excitement on Facebook, it's just been thrilling. It warms my heart to see them excited to come back to my city to run. And this is unique. I say you get all the benefits of a big city race here.
Yeah.
And it's very affordable. So.
Oh, the course is amazing. We got to run through so many interesting parts of Pittsburgh. And, of course, this medal is, like, made of steel. One of the biggest, heaviest medals I think I own now. So growing up in Pittsburgh, did you guys call it the Pit or the Berg?
The Berg, yeah.
The Berg.
Yeah, yeah. Pitt's the college. Yeah.
Okay.
It was always called the Berg.
And how many years in a row now have you done either the half or the full here?
10 years in a row. So the race was defunct for 5 years. And then this race was the 10th anniversary of when it was brought back to life.
Oh, nice.
And I've been to all 10 of them. As a matter of fact, they threw a reception for the runners who have a 10-year streak.
Yeah.
I was able to go.
That's a great streak. How many more years are you going to do it?
Until I can't move anymore.
I believe it.
I've already rearranged two of my kids' first communions to different dates so that I could go to this race. The first Sunday in May every year, and it's always very busy with graduations and weddings and first communions. But I register the first day it's open, and that way I can just tell everyone I already have plans.
Priorities. I appreciate you, man. Good talking to you.
Thank you.
So I decided to finally make my way back to the hotel, and it was pretty close to the finish area, but I was very disoriented. You know, it was a, didn't really know what direction to head. Well, I knew the general direction, but not the specific direction.
Were you in a pizza and beer coma?
No, I was just, the city is actually laid out kind of confusing for, I think, a new visitor. Like, the streets are all diagonal, and so I didn't know what direction to head. I asked Siri, who kindly led me a half a mile in the wrong direction.
Well, you know my opinion of Siri.
Siri never works right when Angie's around.
And I wasn't even around, so.
So I did a lot of walking to find my hotel that was close by, but that's how it goes sometimes, no biggie. It was raining harder and harder, though. Got back, got a shower, felt so good. And then later that day, we had a meetup at the Pittsburgh Hofbräuhaus, the Hofbräuhaus. And I love going to this restaurant. They've got a couple locations here in the U.S. And, of course, I went to the original Hofbräuhaus in Munich last year.
Of course.
You guys might remember that race recap. Angie, you know that I've turned into a real lover of German food and beer.
Yes, you have.
So big thanks to the runners that came out to the MTA meetup: Jeff, Julia, Katie, and Jimmy, Monica, Bonnie, Dale, Bill, Gina, Heidi, and Brian, and Richard. And some of these folks have been longtime fans of MTA listeners for many years, and it was great to finally meet them in person. So here is a soundbite from the meetup. Now, there is live music in the background, as you're going to hear, because we were very close to the stage. So here's a soundbite. Bear with it. It's pretty fun. Hey, we're here at the Hofbräu Pittsburgh with the runners here at the MTA meetup. All right, everybody say hi.
Hello.
I'm going to pass it over to Dale. Tell us full name, where you're from, and how to go today.
Dale Davis from Toledo, Ohio. Ran a PR 5:21:14.
This is Katie Berlin. I'm from Harrisburg area, and I ran the full marathon today. It was my third one. It was a pretty rough race, to be honest. I kind of wanted to quit a lot, but ended up feeling really good when I saw my friends cheering at the finish, so I'm really glad I didn't quit.
You know, Katie's been a member, and for years I wasn't sure if she was a real person because we were in the same area but never could meet up. So
I know, it's nice to finally meet you.
All right.
I'm Bill Filchuk from Morgantown, West Virginia. I ran a 4:28:21, a PR for me today, so it was a good day.
This guy's so loud.
Hi, Bill Burns from Lambertville, Michigan. Made me a PR today in a marathon, 3:08:49. Very proud of that. Thank you.
Hey, it's Rick Moore from Pittsburgh. About the sixth time running the Pittsburgh Marathon. Did the half today. About 2:50 or so. Good day for it, though.
Okay, we're here at the Hofbräuhaus. The guys stopped singing, so it's a little easier to hear one another now. And we're here with some wonderful folks who ran today's Pittsburgh Marathon, Half Marathon. So I'm going to pass this around. Tell me your name, where you're from, and what you did today.
I'm Heidi. I did the full marathon, and
all right.
I did not think that I would finish it until about 15, and then I felt better.
Wow.
There's a lot of hills.
That doesn't happen very often. Feel better at the
at the end, I felt fine. The That's beginning, awesome. I did not.
I'm Brian. This is my first run since having some heart issues, and I think I did pretty well, considering how hilly it was, but it was a lot of fun, and it's great to be back.
Awesome.
I'm Gina. I'm from Edders, out near Harrisburg. I ran the full marathon today. It's my second one. Didn't get the PR I wanted, but I just focused on every mile, just one at a time, did the best I could, and pushed myself through it.
I'm Monica Hoffman. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, but right now I'm hanging with the DC Roadrunners in Washington. And I had to drop back to the half due to injuries, but it was so much fun. This city is so fantastic. These people that are here are terrific. And now I'm going to pass you on to somebody else.
My name's Bonnie Gala. I'm out of Mechanicsburg, which is near Harrisburg. I was supposed to do the full, but I dropped back to the half due to injury. and basically watched the clock the half, but I had a really good time, and that's fine. There will always be races in my future.
I'm Julia from New Cumberland. I did the half marathon, and the beginning was a breeze, the middle was tough, and the end, I feel like I pulled through. It was very humid, but it was a good race.
I'm Julia's husband, Jeff Palladino, from New Cumberland, Pennsylvania, and I ran the full marathon today. I didn't run my best race, but I ran in my favorite city in the world with a lot of my running friends, so I had a great time.
Well, always fun to get together with fellow runners and celebrate another race, and especially to meet fans of the MTA podcast. We appreciate all of you out there listening and hope to meet you at a race someday. Well, this would be a good time to thank our episode sponsor, Health IQ. They use science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like runners. And, you know, after we started having kids, I realized how much I had to live for.
How much more?
Yeah. Having kids really makes you stop and think, though. And I remember I stopped hitting the big ski jumps after our first kid was born because I thought, I need to be around for this little guy.
Yeah.
And I also started thinking about getting life insurance. The good thing about life insurance is it's very affordable and it gives you peace of mind.
That's right. And Health IQ can get you a better rate based on your active and healthy lifestyle. They use science and data to prove that active people like runners are a better insurance risk than the average population. In fact, runners have a 49% lower risk of heart disease and a 30% lower risk of all-cause mortality. So to see if you qualify, get your free quote today by going to healthiq.com/marathon.
That's healthiq.com/marathon. And we'd also like to thank the Spartan Race for sponsoring this episode. I did 3 Spartan races last year, had a great time. Spartan Race is an obstacle course racing company which has races for every athletic ability and skill level, starting with a 3-mile sprint with 20 obstacles, or all the way up to the 12-mile beast, which has 30 obstacles. Any racer can find what's right for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. Running might be the most underrated Spartan obstacle, and we believe if you can run, you can race. So find your Spartan race today. Go to spartan.com/marathon for an exclusive offer and to find a race near you, and also to view training and nutrition tips. I definitely recommend everyone trying the Spartan race. They're a lot of fun. And trust me, your endurance as a long-distance runner will help you in the race. As the Spartan people say, finding a race to commit to shouldn't be too hard as long as you leave your excuses behind. Once again, just visit spartan.com/marathon for exclusive offers and to find a race near you. So the next day, I wanted to look around Pittsburgh a bit before heading back home. So, Angie, I went to the Duquesne Incline. Remember the trolley car rail system I told you about? Went in there, and it cost $2.50 to ride to the top, and I just walked out. That's way too much for me. No, but they needed exact change, and the smallest bill I had was a 20. So I went to the change machine, put in my bill, and got like a pocket full of coins. But it was fun, and I walked around a couple miles that day around the city. After a marathon, it helps to get out and walk around. It really does. It kind of stretch your stiff post-marathon legs, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, one of the roughest things you can do is get directly into a car or airplane and have to sit for many hours. Then, you know, you're walking like,
yeah,
like you just had surgery or something. So what was your official finishing time?
My finishing time was 5 hours, 4 minutes. In 0 seconds.
How did you do that?
I don't know. It's just
what
it says.
That is really cool.
I tried really hard to get that exact time.
So I figured.
I'm glad I succeeded.
Congratulations.
Marathon number 15 for me. Definitely not my fastest race, but always feels great to go the distance, to push through the hills, to chew them up, and to be chewed up by them.
And it sounds like you had a lot of fun along the way, so that's what counts.
That's right. And if you want to see pictures from my race, you can see that on our website with the show notes to this episode. That's it for the recap. Now we want to get into the quick tip. Angie, so we got a great question in from Lindy. We decided to use it in the quick tip today. So what is Lindy's question about suffering in the last half of the marathon?
Yeah, she posted this in our private Academy Facebook group. And she says, I have lots of questions following my marathon yesterday. Does everyone suffer horribly for the last 6 to 8 miles? And is it just part of the experience? Or is there genuinely a way to train so it doesn't end that way? I suspect there may be an unspoken code of silence about how bad it really is. And like childbirth, we highlight the high moments and wink quietly about the rest.
Yeah, I've wondered that myself. Like, is it just me that suffers that bad? Or the look of pain on many people's faces. I think we're all in it together, you know?
Right. And I think there is a natural human tendency to highlight the positive and downplay the negative. And that's, you know, kind of what keeps our species going strong, is we tend to, you know, especially challenges that we find that are worth it, whether it's having children or training for a marathon, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of discomfort and pain involved. But we choose to take that on knowing that the rewards, hopefully, are going to be greater than the struggles. And I think that's one of the reasons why the marathon really remains a compelling challenge for many people, because it doesn't fit into a neat little box. There are so many diverse factors that go into your marathon experience. There's personal things like your training, your overall health, the self-talk that you have, your pacing, your fueling, the amount of marathons you've done, or your long run experience. So there's all those personal things. And then there are the factors that we really can't control as much as we'd like to. There's like course variables, like the width of the roads of the course, the amount of participants, how crowded the marathon is, hills like there were in Pittsburgh, and other technical aspects. So, I mean, you can kind of choose a marathon course that's easier than others, but really you have no control. Once you're there, you just have to run the same course. And then there's aspects like weather, humidity, heat, extreme cold, wind, all those factors make it more challenging. And of course, how your body is feeling that day. And really we have very little control over those factors. And I think it is true that the last 6 to even 13 miles of a marathon can be a huge test of willpower. There have been a few marathons where I've questioned my sanity. I've promised myself never to run another marathon and have felt, you know, fairly negative about the experience. So if you feel that way, you're not alone. I think it's a very normal thing. I mean, I remember some points, you know, I would pass the halfway point and be like, oh, why didn't I run the half marathon? Like you were feeling in Pittsburgh, you know, it's like, maybe I should stick to half marathons. You know, our minds really can chime in with a lot of self-doubt when we're feeling discomfort.
I didn't think, oh, I should have ran the half. I mean, I was glad I signed up for the full and I knew I could get through it. I was questioning, like, where am I going with my marathon running?
Like, has your marathoning plateaued and is not going to get any better, that kind of thing?
I started to think, like, I don't have any talent for this. Obviously, I'm slowing way down and I'm an okay half marathoner. I can run a 2-hour half marathon, but I can't run a 4-hour marathon very well. So those kind of thoughts, like, okay, well, maybe I'm just not meant to run full marathons.
Well, I think it's a matter of perspective too. I think, like some people have put it, they feel like a turtle running through peanut butter, you know, and so for them, a 5-hour marathon would be like a huge accomplishment for them. So it's really all relative to your speed. And I think that's, you know, one of the reasons why it's so important to have realistic expectations going into your race and not to compare yourself to anyone else. Really, we're just competing against ourselves. And there's some races where it's not about competing. It's just about going the distance. And so, you know, having the right framework, the right mental attitude makes a big difference. Then if you run enough marathons, there are going to be those marathons where you feel great about those final miles, you're in less discomfort, and you're passing people left and right. I know there have been times when the last 10K, it's like, wow, I can't believe I'm in the final miles of a marathon. This is amazing. Now, that is not the rule. That is like the exception for sure. You know, feeling that state of flow after mile 20, but it can happen. So everyone is not suffering equally, I should say, toward the last part of a marathon.
So that's happened to you before.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so I don't think there's a magic formula to guarantee a great marathon experience, but each race does teach you more about yourself and help you be more prepared for future marathons and other challenges in life. So, you know, a lot of it goes down to your preparation, but there's a lot of factors that are just outside of our control. And learning to find a mental framework to deal with that discomfort and to put things in perspective can be so helpful. And I think one of the great things about being part of a running community, especially, you know, like a marathon community, is that we can learn from the experience of others. We can have these conversations about the highs and the lows of marathon training and racing. And we can, you know, keep in mind that we're an experiment of one. You know, I don't think any of us ever feel like we've arrived as a runner. And probably anyone who feels like that maybe has the, you know, panicky sensation that maybe they should just stop while they're ahead, you know, which I think is why a lot of elites tend to retire when they feel like they're at the top of their game, because so much of their identity is invested in their success and they really can't face getting slower. Mm-hmm. So it just really depends on your perspective for the marathon, you know, your reasoning for doing it. And I hope on this podcast that we can really delve into the good, the bad, and the ugly so that we can present an honest perspective and people can know that, you know, we all struggle and we all have those high days where we feel like we're in a state of flow. And then there's those days where we feel like turtles running through peanut butter.
You know, and some people, they want to get to that point where they're suffering and they're pushing themselves on tired legs. So they welcome it because they feel like that's what makes them stronger. They're not afraid of running to the point where it's just uncomfortable and not fun at all, because that's where really you start building a lot of fortitude.
Yeah. And if you are pursuing your best in running and going for those PRs, whether it be in pace or distance, you know, you are going to come to the point where the term is running the edge, where you are running that edge of discomfort, of, you know, testing your physical and your mental and your emotional willpower. So yeah, if you're seeking excellence, then it's going to get ugly sometimes, but that's where you really learn a lot about yourself.
I like it. So in a way, I don't appreciate it when I'm out there doing it, but after it's done, I'm kind of glad that those later miles are hard for me. Then it's just a matter of just pushing myself to go when I don't feel like going, because triumphing over all the pain and discomfort, I think it sets you up for success in life. You know, now I could say, what I'm doing today is hard, but it's not as hard as that marathon I just ran. So it kind of puts things in perspective.
Yeah, I think that's another thing about the marathon. If it were easy, then we probably wouldn't be so driven to train and learn and try to figure out how we can be more successful at it. It's hard, and that's why we do it.
So the answer to the question, does everyone suffer horribly for the last 6 to 8 miles of the marathon? The answer is probably yes, and the answer is also no.
That's right.
And even if you do suffer horribly, we're not talking about like doing bodily harm to yourself.
Right. Exactly. You need to listen to your body and live to run another day if it's come to that.
Right. But outside of that, you know, we're not talking about getting carried away in an ambulance or tearing your hamstring, but just the normal suffering that we all experience running a marathon. Even if that does happen, embrace it, welcome it, because that's what makes the marathon so special. There's magic in the misery.
Yeah, and that's what makes you a stronger person.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you guys for tuning in. Always love to hear from you. If you want to send us an email, we have a contact form on our website, marathontrainingacademy.com. Also, a lot of resources over there. Remember to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done that already. That way you won't miss any new episodes that come out. We just want to encourage you to keep taking action toward your goals. You are becoming a stronger and stronger person. It's a beautiful thing. Until next time, remember you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way.